Welcome, everyone. We're so glad to be with you today. This is Kaylin Castell here with Daniel DiMario, and we are here on behalf of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. It is a 501c3 educational nonprofit that provides transformational education in astronomy and astrology. We are so happy to be here with you again and sharing about the sacred timings or initiation cycles as they are experienced personally and generationally. But first, I just want to say a couple of things. We have a Facebook page. Some of you are already part of that page. If you aren't yet and you would like to be, this is a way to have some interaction during the call. People can make comments, they can post insights, and also ask questions on that page. If you go to the Shamanic Astrology Facebook page or search for group, the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School group, then ask to be added to the page. We have someone who's monitoring that and will add you right away. And so for those of you who are already on that page too, be sure to add your comments or questions, and we'll do our best to answer as many of those questions as possible. And that's really the advantage and why we've presented this option to the last call and also this call, and it really worked out well last time. So some people, that was how they got their questions answered. We will also have a live Q&A. When we get to that part, I will tell you how to get into the queue, and we will then take your questions in the order of the people that are in the queue. So also, we would just want to say that if you find this information that we shared in these classes that is useful, we would invite you to consider becoming a member of the school. Members receive really great benefits, including free monthly calls that focus on what's happening in the sky. And we talk about the best ways to work with these timings. We also have time for Q&A. If you can't be on the call, your recording is made available to members. It's on the members' website. There is a special members' website where you can download that call and listen to it when it's convenient for you. And if you can't be on the call, we also do take questions by email and do our best to answer all of those. Plus, members also receive really great discounts on events and products. And right now, until the end of the year, so just coming up pretty quickly, we also have a special offer for the newly revised and expanded Shamanic Astrology Handbook that was released this year. We've added 50 pages of content to the book. It has a whole new look, and that's also part of a free offer on silver or gold memberships. You can get a free copy of the handbook. And so those are the main announcements, except that we also want to make sure that you know we are having an event in February 20th to the 24th, that is our 5-day intensive on the shamanic timeline and planetary complexes and initiation cycles that goes into much greater depth and detail on what it is that we're going to be sharing here tonight. So we'd love to have you join us for that. And also, we've just added to the schedule something very exciting and a place where we used to have events and haven't had an event there for 6 years, almost 7 years, a place called Baywood Hot Springs in New Mexico, where there is a standing stone circle. Daniel designed it, and the owner of Baywood, who was the owner at that time, built the circle based on Daniel's input, and it's a very living, breathing, great teaching tool, but also a great ceremonial and powerful sacred site at a powerful sacred hot spring. So we're very excited that we're going to be able to offer that event again at Baywood. And there's information on our website on the events page, and that's going to happen over the spring equinox, March 16th to 20th. So those are the announcements, and now I would like to introduce to you the founder of Shamanic Astrology and the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, Daniel DiMario. Thank you, Daniel. Are you ready to go?
I am. Thank you, Kaylin. All right.
You're welcome.
And the other three, we were sitting across from each other, but now we're in different locations, so this will be a little bit different feeling about this one. We decided to have a fourth free teleclass because one of the most important features of the shamanic astrology paradigm we haven't had a chance to to talk about. So far, we had a teleclass on the Venus and Mars material, the 24 gods and goddesses, the sacred marriage. We also had one on the archetypes themselves and the script material, the way in which the moon and the rising sign and it works in shamanic astrology, and the 144 storylines from our lineage and for current life purpose. And we also, in our last teleclass, talked about the cycles of this time, the turning of the ages, the galactic alignment, certain things about the Uranus-Pluto square. It was more of a global approach to how we would look at our times using shamanic astrology. But there's another feature that can be really helpful for tuning in to what's going on in your own lives, which has to do with where the cycles of initiation are happening. And I want to maybe in the beginning part of our conversation here, which we'll go back and forth. I'll be sharing some things, and then Kaylin will also. We'll be looking at the most important things we can know as far as cycles, the cycles and seasons of your life. This is going to be presented in two categories, two equally important categories. One would be what we call the shamanic timeline. I believe this is one of the crown jewels of the shamanic astrology paradigm, which is a way of seeing where you are in your life just pretty much based upon how old you are. So, for example, I'm not the caricature of the astrologer who, when I meet someone or if I look at, you know, wanting to look at the astrology, I'm not so much wanting to know what's your sign. I'm more interested in knowing how old a person is. So if an individual happens to be, say, for example, 59, there's an immediate knowledge about where that person is along the timeline of their life. If a person was, for example, 53, there is no shamanic timeline cycle happening, at least based on just how old a person is, and I'll speak about this, how we determine this in more depth as we go through. But this is just based upon how old a person is, the knowledge we can have, if a person is 33, if a person is 29, if a person is 64, really major information is available just by knowing that. So that's the first category. The second category would have to do with the cycles of the outer planets and their relationship with the specific degrees on the natal chart, whatever degree of Venus or Mars or the Sun. And this would include the degrees of the angles of the chart, the ascendant, the midheaven, the home and roots, otherwise called the IC, the descendant. The outer planet cycles, and what I mean by this would be Jupiter through Pluto, including Chiron, where those particular planets are in the sky and their relationship to the specific personal degrees on the chart. We've spent so much time working with this. It's been a major feature of the research that Kaylin and I do with our clients, students, and so on, which is coming up with really usable initiation windows for all of these cycles, and different planets are going to be having different initiatory windows. We'll have an opportunity in this conversation to pinpoint a lot of these, and in the last 45 or 50 minutes of the teleclass, we can look at your own individual questions regarding what's happening on your own charts. I think we forgot to mention, Kaylin, that at the beginning we're open to having people ask questions regarding anything we've brought up to this point, not just on the timeline, but regarding the storylines, the 144 storylines, the moon, the rising sign, the different expressions of the god and the goddess, and even questions having to do with the nature of the time frame we're in now on the planet. All right, so what I guess where I want to go next with this is to present a larger framework on how we can understand any of the cycles, whether they're the cycles along the timeline or whether they're the cycles that are individual cycles that are taking place, like, say, Pluto on the ascendant or something like that. And in shamanic astrology, we view all the planetary processes as existing in one of three worlds. Now, this is an understanding that comes directly from what I guess you could say would be shamanism 101, the basic core shamanic understanding, which is probably the most simplistic way of saying it would be, as we say, shamanism 101, is the division of our experience into three worlds: upper world, sometimes called the celestial, middle world, the world of objective reality, physical, objective, resume kinds of things, and then the underworld, sometimes called the lower world. And in the paradigm we're using here, Uranus and Neptune would be symbols of the upper world or the celestial. Saturn, Jupiter, and the cycles of the nodes of the moon would be in the middle world, the world of objective reality. And then Chiron and Pluto would be symbols of the initiatory processes associated with the underworld. What I would like to do is just explain a little bit about what we mean by those three worlds. In our school at this point, we believe that anything that happens in the world, anything that happens in your life, from a really comprehensive perspective, it's useful to look at any event from the perspective of all three worlds. And yet, in your own individual lives, you may be in a time period in your life where it's primarily underworld. You might be in a time period in your life where it's primarily middle world or primarily upper world. So what do we mean by this? Let's start with the upper world or the celestial realm, Uranus and Neptune. From the perspective of the upper world or the celestial, all is well. The universe is unfolding as it should. The upper world, whether we look at it from the perspective of Uranus and Neptune, would involve the kinds of things that are part of the, in a sense, part of the higher mysteries. Would have to do with miracles, the unexpected, the kinds of events that cannot be predicted, the kinds of experiences that don't really care that much about middle world or practical or linear kinds of things. Uranus, for example, is about unexpected, unpredictable, unknowable events of extreme novelty that are designed to change what has been in place for a long time. Not because something has been wrong or bad, but change in a sense for novelty or change's sake. Sometimes in shamanism this is called shifting the assemblage point, like being hit by lightning in a good way. Neptune, on the other hand, is not quite the same. I mean, Neptune is still celestial, upper world, but this would be the kinds of life cycles where there is really nothing to hold on to in objective reality, like the sand slipping out from beneath your feet, or a time period, if you embrace it correctly, it would be like a walkabout. What do I do today? Well, the eagle is flying to the north. I guess I'll go that way. Oh, I don't see the eagle anymore. So, well, there's an interesting cloud formation off in the other direction, and I guess that's where I will go. Usually from a spiritual perspective, the Neptune cycles are the antidote to clarity. in Carlos Castaneda's work, he would say the last roadblock to enlightenment is clarity. If you really know how it all is, if you really think you know how it all is, then you're in trouble. So it's a time period to not know. It could be much evidenced by those time periods where you're lying in bed at night and you see arrayed in front of you multiple lines of probability. And they just stretch out in all directions, and no matter how hard you try, you can't bring them into focus. We would generally suggest to individuals when they're in such a cycle to just let it stretch out even more. Don't mind. Don't try to bring it into clarity. This is just it's like a shorthand understanding of the celestial or upper world cycles. Now, if we go to the middle world, Saturn, Jupiter, and the nodes. Now, this is way more about what's actually happening in a concrete, grounded way. The third dimensional reality, also the phases of life, the time periods when we mature to the next level. I mean, it can include things like puberty or second puberty or the time frame when marriages and divorces happen naturally, the moves, the change in hierarchy between parents and children, between our own experience and our parents, things like that. And Jupiter and Saturn tend to be complementary opposites. They sort of support each other in, by the nature of their opposing tendencies. Jupiter will teach us how to grow, change, and evolve through expansion. I rather like the expression activation of enthusiasm for the Jupiter effect. Saturn, on the other hand, will teach us how to grow, change, and evolve via limitations and boundaries, which sounds at first to be something negative. However, it's really a definition of the process of maturation, like a snake shedding its skin. At first, the snake may be really freaked out. And, oh my God, it's over, it's finished, I'm in trouble, I really loved my skin. Well, not really, but it was mine. And then the snake is afraid that maybe there's not another skin. But it just moves forward naturally. It's not an underworld cycle. It's a natural instinctual cycle of moving into the next phase. And the skin, basically the snake has just simply outgrown the skin. The human being has gone past a phase. And then the old skin comes off, and then there's a fresh, precious, new phase of life experience. The nodes also are part of the middle world, defining also phases of life, times of realignment with original intent, times of having to make assessments about whether a person is really on track or not with their original life purpose. Now, last but not least, would be the underworld or the lower world. When we use the expression underworld, we're certainly not talking about a Christian version of hell. We're not talking about organized crime. We're talking about the underworld in the following sense. We know it's the underworld in our life when the three main ways of handling challenges don't work. Well, what are those three main ways? Well, for example, people of action. We use strength, muscle, will to remove an obstacle. A second possibility would be that people who are thinking types will look at an obstacle or a challenge as something to figure out, a puzzle to solve. And that's a perfectly acceptable and normal way to handle things. However, in the underworld, it doesn't work. The third approach is what I like to call the varieties of denial. You know, like a person who's, say, too stuck in the celestial, it's like, oh, well, there is no challenge. There is no, I didn't care about it anyway. It's all good. Sometimes called spiritual bypass or light polarization. The other example of a variety of denial would be the person who's a workaholic who stays so busy to not even notice any obstacles. Well, these are all techniques that work at various times quite well. But in the underworld, none of them work. So basically, the underworld experiences chaos, conditions beyond our control, conditions absolutely, completely unfathomable that even the mind can't figure out. There isn't even the recourse to be able to figure it out, like, well, gee, this happened because I screwed up, or this happened as a punishment, or this was like something that happened to me because as a punishment for having done something wrong in the past. No recourse even to that. It's kind of like the old bumper sticker that used to be really popular on the West Coast and may still be out there. The bumper sticker stating, shit happens. it's not because of any logical reason. You can't even have any recourse to figure it out, and it's not a punishment for anything. This is, from a spiritual perspective, what could be considered to be the conditions for surrender. And for those who know about surrender, you know there's no technique for surrender. If there were a technique for it, then it wouldn't be surrender. So we have that situation with the underworld process, and Chiron and Pluto both will define that kind of life experience. There's a portion of the underworld material that is not frequently, is frequently not spoken of. After the surrender, after the chaos, the underworld is also the place of empowerment, of abundance, of aliveness, of life force. And frequently the advantage of actually being in the underworld and having tolerated it and gone through it and is a sense of empowerment that comes as if from the center of the earth up. It's a very organic kind of thing. It's not a detached kind of thing. So anyway, that's a bit of a flavor for the different the three worlds and the way of understanding these cycles of seasons of our life and how to access where we are on the timeline. There's navigation techniques for every one of these initiation cycles. I want to just pause for a moment, turn it over to you, Kaylin, for your comments here.
Nothing's leaping to mind at the moment. I think you've been covering that really well. I just want to say that what Daniel has shared with everyone is the sort of cliff notes on these worlds, and that when we understand where the initiation cycles are taking place and how to navigate them, it is incredibly empowering. And when things are sort of crazy and out of control in our life, and we know that that's actually the time for that to be happening, it can be the most supportive thing that any person could know, that they didn't, they'd not necessarily have done anything wrong. You know, it wouldn't necessarily have been done anything different if they had been more perfect at doing what they were doing, or you know, had been able to be more spiritually centered, or you know, grounded, or had made better decisions in the past. But these cycles of initiation are really designed to take us in the direction of our soul's journey and growth, and it doesn't always make logical sense.
That brings up a really interesting point, which is that frequently those of us in modern times and have been trained in a Western kind of way, we tend to assume that the journey of our life is linear. So if we've learned something, well, then the very next thing is a linear ascent. Nothing could be further from the truth. The cycles and seasons of our lives happen in somewhat illogical spiral approach. If you looked at the entire life, maybe 80 years, 70 years, it's like it would be thought of as an ascending spiral. But at any given point in our life, and I run into this all the time with my clients, a person could have, say, been in a Saturn cycle, and they've done really hard work to change the game. They've told the truth about what isn't working. They've grown up. They've made hard decisions. But it isn't always the same what happens after that. A person could go through one of these really powerful Saturn maturation points, as I'm mentioning, But it could be followed by pretty much anything. It could be followed by a Pluto cycle. You know, does it make any sense that after all that hard work, you could be going into the underworld? Well, it sometimes happens. In other cases, a person does all the hard work in a Saturn cycle, and they're greeted by a Jupiter cycle following after that, which would seem to be like a reward. This is why the astrological model can be so helpful, because you can actually not one size fits all. I usually will use the expression when a really difficult cycle is followed by an underworld cycle. I said, well, this is actually rather inelegant. You know, you wouldn't think logically this should happen next, but it can happen like that.
And when that does happen, sometimes it can be the most amazing and empowering thing, even though initially it's like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. The process that we go through is just not ever going to make sense. And I think there's a sort of a classic statement where people will say, this isn't what I thought I would be doing at this point in my life. Or this I didn't think I would be going through this experience at this point in my life.
Yes, I've had sometimes individuals who happen to be in the zone 51 to 52, or they could be in a Neptune cycle at any point, and maybe well into their life. And I've had individuals say to me, you know, Daniel, I've been on the spiritual path for like 30 years. I mean, I have been on the path, and it's really hard for me to say this, but the truth is, I don't know who I am. and I have the opportunity at that point to report back to that person. I'll say something, and I don't mean to be glib here, well done. You know, I mean, it's really a huge thing, a huge achievement for an individual to be able to be surrendered enough or to be open enough to realize that it actually can be a huge advantage even later in life to say, I don't know who I am. That's where the greatest transformation will take place, when there's a willingness to tell the truth about that kind of thing.
And it can be such a relief, too, to know that the process that you're in and the experience you're having is exactly the one that's meant, mm-hmm. for, you know, in terms of the initiations that are taking place, and that you really are on track, even though it doesn't make any sense based mm-hmm. on all the things that you've done. The other thing is that sometimes people will come, you know, find themselves going through something that feels very familiar and similar, and they thought they'd handled that situation and that issue, and then it comes back up in another mm-hmm. cycle for another opportunity to get it at an even deeper level, right. And it can feel discouraging initially, especially if you aren't understanding what your process is, here we are again, one more time.
Another thing I've noticed over the years is that particularly when we're talking about the underworld cycles, Chiron and particularly Pluto, it can be so helpful for an individual to actually know that such a thing as an underworld cycle can happen, and that it's part of the process, that it's a completely natural thing to take place. We're not generally trained in our culture to believe that those things are natural, that they do happen in our lives. Obviously, some people maybe have them more often than others, but the fact that it's a known cycle. One of the fascinating factors is that if you go back 5,000-6,000 years, this knowledge of the underworld process, the descent into the underworld, kinds of life experiences that force surrender, were well known. But then, in more recent times, we had to wait until 1930 to have science discover this object that it's almost impossible to find in the sky. It requires a really super high-powered telescope to find Pluto, and then to name that particular object to be symbolic of the process of the underworld. I guess it came back into modern times that way. But there's certainly nothing new under the sun here. The understanding of the process of the underworld initiation has been well known to the ancients, and we now have it fully integrated in our understanding of the life process now. This the underworld experience can be some of the most difficult things people go through. But often the difficulty is simply not even knowing that it's something that we do go through as human beings, and that it doesn't mean we've screwed up or done something wrong.
Facing personal judgment as well as the judgment of the people around you, going, what's going on with you? Why is this happening? Or you must have done something, or, you know, the judgments of other people, that especially if they're having a hard time with whatever you might be going through, and then you have to deal with their judgments on top of all of it.
Well, one of the things I've been noticing so often in the last 5-10 years is the confusion that individuals can have between Saturn and Pluto. They both can involve challenging experiences, but there's there's such a complete difference. Like if a person is going through a Saturn-type initiation, it is in fact possible to figure it out. For example, let's say a person, you know, has had a repeated number of experiences of heartbreak, of disappointment, of separation, of sorrow in their love life. And if it happens to be because of a Saturn initiatory process, then you actually can sort it out. You know, you might I'm just giving a caricature example here, although it has literally shown up a number of times. You know, the individual, we look at their pattern of their life, and we'll say, well, what did you expect? That's the seventh time you tried to make it work with the same person. You know, and so the results become expectable. You know, maybe the Saturn cycle is an intelligence test to change the game. Stop rolling the stone up the hill the same way. Now, that can actually be figured out. However, if it's a Plutonian situation, it's irrational. There's no way to figure it out. Even if in figuring out something, you're not liking the answer you find, but you can actually see what's going on in a logical way, but not with Pluto.
I remember when I first learned about Saturn. I mean, Pluto years ago, and I had just been through a major Pluto process, and I kept saying and didn't know. I'm like, I'm a good person. I've done everything right. How could this be happening to me? How could my life be completely disintegrating and there's nothing I can do to stop it?
Right.
It just didn't make any sense. And then when I got this information, of course, it was in hindsight, but it was like, oh, that could have been so helpful if I had known that prior to, and instead of feeling like God was punishing me or that somehow I must have screwed up in a past life or something to be going through the experience I was having. And also to be in the place of having this incredible empowerment, because what wasn't really in alignment for me that I was trying to make work, you know, wasn't really mine to do, and it needed to be taken away, and it was.
Which actually reminds me to bring something up here, which is that a good one of the frameworks that we have in looking at the cycles is actually, it's an antidote from the version of karma, which I like to refer to as Christianized karma. I mean, if you go to India, where invented the whole understanding and concept of karma, and if you ask them, well, what about karma? Their answer is going to be, unfathomable are the ways of karma. But all too often, in otherwise spiritual or metaphysical organizations these days, it's pretty easy for people to project onto our life experience the judgment that is a sort of Christianized version of karma. Right? Maybe rather than, you know, pinpointing Christianity per se, it's more like pinpointing the Calvinistic version of Christianity. You know, therefore, if you're rich, you're already the elect of God. If you're poor, then you've already been judged as being, unworthy. And if you have bad things happen, it's punishment for having screwed up, and so on. This is so completely opposed to the views of other spiritual traditions like Buddhism, so that if you end up, say, having a serious illness, rather than being judged, well, you must not have had the right diet or you must have been doing your meditation wrong. If you have a serious illness or a challenging problem, I mean, the spiritual teacher will say, well, now you have that as your experience on your path. There's no judgment. There's nothing about having screwed up or this was punishment, or if you're doing really well, it must be a reward for having done, so many wonderful things in past lives.
And you created it by your positive or negative thinking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're having a bad experience, it's because you created that reality. And and some level that can be true, but sometimes there are events beyond our control that are designed to take us into territory that we wouldn't go into willingly or consciously. So that's what it takes. So the universe needs to call our bluff and create the circumstances that's going to take us into the territory that we're often not so willing to go into.
And sometimes it's actually just designed so we don't take it personally. and then actually we can bring up next here one of the primary idealisms of the shamanic astrology paradigm that has to do with the navigation tools for these different initiation cycles along the timeline as well as the individual cycles you're in, which is that we do have this idealism that the universe is supportive of human beings who consciously participate or are in alignment with the nature of the cycle they're actually in. There's actually support, universal support, that will come if we are in alignment with the cycle we're actually in. And sometimes that can be as simple as, a completely simplistic analogy, but it really works this way. If you're going to want to plant a garden, you don't do it in the winter. There are certain cycles and seasons for taking action. There are certain cycles and seasons for laying out. There are certain cycles and seasons for healing and recuperating. There are certain cycles and seasons to do something entirely different than anything that has to do with objective reality. And there are certain cycles and seasons where we just can't do anything. And it's really important to know what those cycles and seasons are. Now, I know that the way we're explaining it sounds relatively straightforward. And sometimes there will be a person I'm working with where they're only in one of the cycles, or they could maybe just in Jupiter and Saturn, or maybe just in Pluto, just in the underworld, or just in Neptune. I mean, I'm not saying that if you're only in one of them that it's quote-unquote easy, but it is straightforward. It's everything is within one framework. But more often than not, there's several going on at the same time, and then
sometimes you can have all of them going on at the same time.
Right. And then it becomes a very interesting project, and we love working together with people on this to actually have a co-creation as being second opinion to a person's intuition, but also trying to sort out. How do you establish a context? Where what is the larger context? And then what is operating within that context? And that's some of our favorite explorations for sure.
Something, too, that just occurs to me is that just by knowing about the cycle doesn't mean you get out of it. But it does give you great tools for navigating it. And I know that the last major Pluto cycle that I went through, I knew that, things would probably be ending, and they did, and I was able to consciously surrender and just go with it and realize that I didn't need to fight it, I didn't need to do anything differently, I just needed to just go with the flow of it, and a lot of things ended that I didn't really want to necessarily or consciously thought that I wanted to end, but once they did, you get to that place in the cycle where it's about empowerment, oftentimes what people will experience is it's more amazing than they could have imagined while they were going through the process of having to release, let go, surrender, etc. So it's so worth getting to the other side, even though it can feel like hell while you're going through it. Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's one of the advantages of knowing about the cycles and the length of the cycles, is to know that when you're in one of them, that it's not forever, that it has a beginning point, a middle point, and an end point. Even though some of the more overwhelming underworld ones do have a feature that can make a person lose track entirely of an objective framework, but that is why the knowledge of the astrology can be so helpful. Because you say, okay, it seems like I'm in the midst of this underworld time and it'll never change, but in fact it does. That there will have a middle point and an end point to it. It's not forever. I just thought of one other thing that I wanted to bring out here before we open this all up, open this up for questions and comments, and that it has to do with how different it can be for different people within the framework of the global aspects that are taking place. I mean, from 2012 to 2015, there are 7 Uranus-Pluto squares. I would think that every person out there in the world who's an astrologer, who talks, speaks, writes, gives workshops, opens their mouth about everybody's weighed in on what they think the Uranus-Pluto process is. And there's a huge amount of things that can be said about that from the perspective of the global situation, where we are as global humanity, where we are as a planet at this time. But not everyone will have their own individual chart specifically personally aligned or connected to the global aspect. I've had clients in the last year, and there's like literally nothing whatsoever on their individual chart that is connected to this Uranus-Pluto global aspect. And they could be having the time of their lives, or they could be involved in something entirely separate from anything that's going on in the world per se. And then there are going to be individuals that were something really personal on their chart. Venus, Mars, rising sign, moon, sun, something really important on their chart is in the crosswires of the Uranus-Pluto square. They're certainly going to be then on the front lines of the global process. You know, so they're not going to be laying out or sitting out this particular time. I mean, they're being stretched to their limits personally and individually in connection to this global aspect. Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing to see people who are on that leading edge of those cycles and how they're feeling it so much more personally than some people who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if we look at what's going on the planet, it's definitely pretty intense and everybody's feeling it to some degree. But mm-hmm. the people who have it personally are feeling it at a much more magnified level.
So when we open this up now to comments and questions, just a reminder that you can actually bring in everything else we've talked about up to this point. The foundation of this understanding is on the storylines, the moon, the ascendant, the lineage, the life purpose issues, the awareness of the archetypes, the different gods and goddesses, the different players in the script. I mean, that's foundational here, I'm particularly interested in getting feedback here and questions regarding where you are on the timeline and understanding of the timeline cycles, and rather than going through the entire timeline, we will illustrate some of it when people ask questions, and then, of course, the planetary initiation cycles of the outer planets, Jupiter through Pluto, including the nodes in relationship to the natal chart, the inner planets and the angles of the chart.
Right. So what Daniel is describing here are two different things. One, are there are cycles that people go through at certain ages, so the generational cycles and what we call the shamanic timeline. And then there are the personal cycles that we go through that can happen at any age, at any time, and are based on where the planets were on our natal chart at the time we're born. And we can actually be in personal cycles and generational cycles at the same time, or we may be just in personal cycles or just in generational cycles. And then there's very rare occasions where people aren't really in much of anything going on, which is a time of more like a free space.
Yes, actually, we can. That may come up in our conversation later, but the, yeah, there's ways of navigating time periods of no cycles, which is quite a unique time, and it does happen. Or you
right.
could actually be at a time period when, you know, you could be in Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, all at the same time. And I just want to mention one other thing too. Is that included in the time, included in the cycles along the timeline, which include things like Saturn returns and Neptune squares and Pluto squares and Jupiter returns, included in what we look at. Pardon?
Oh, I just said Uranus opposition and squares
sure.
and returns.
But then there, one of the more unique features of the shamanic astrology paradigm, there's only about three or four other astrologers that regularly use these things, which is the synodic cycle returns, the 8-year cycles of Venus, the 15 and 17-year cycle of Mars, the Mercury returns, the times in which the original planetary placements of Venus, Mars, and Mercury will return to their precise location closest to one's birthday, where you actually have this time period in your life where the original configuration that symbolized the set of instructions for your current life intent reconstellate later in life. For Venus every 8 years, and various points for Mars, and these are actually the timings that have the greatest amount of ceremonial magic of truly as above, so below, where the original set of instructions is sort of reanimated later in life.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And another one of the crown jewels of shamanic astrology is how not only the synodic cycles work and how to work with them and have a ceremonial connection and understanding and get the most benefit out of those particular cycles, but how they interweave with the other generational cycles and how we include that into, you know, there's certain times when there'll be, say, a nodal return and a Mercury return or a Venus return and a Mars return together. And, you know, there's certain timings that happen with Saturn and, you know, Venus or Mars or Mercury. So, when those things happen, it's really helpful to have this larger perspective and understanding yes. to really sort it out and to make the most of that particular time. Very magical.
Well, maybe it's time.
I think it is. So what I'd like everybody to do, if you have a question, is press *6. Let me just turn on the queue. And so if you press *6, it will put you in the queue, and we'll start taking questions. I'll also be bouncing back and forth between this and the Facebook page if people are on the Facebook page and want to type in a question. I will be looking at that. And so I'm going to take the first question, and if you, when you click on it, if you could just say what your name is and what your question is, that would be great. So here we go.
Hi. I was diagnosed with a pretty devastating illness when I was 33 years old and have been dealing with that same thing for 20 plus years. And during I consider it my greatest blessing because of what it gave me and what it allowed me to learn during that time. Number one, during that time, I was a jewelry artist, self-taught, And I went forward and began to work with healing work, first with Reiki and then quite suddenly with soul retrieval work that just came naturally. And I had a practice for a few years, for quite a few years, worked out of a doctor's office and worked as the doctor's medical intuitive. Finally, in 2001, I stopped because I was so ill and have just barely done, you know, a few things over the years. Currently, I'm 53 and about to turn 54. And I'm wondering, about a year ago, I began making jewelry again, and it's going very, very well. It's become successful, and it's wonderful. It's online. It's easy. But the question is, I'm really feeling drawn to be working with soul retrieval and Reiki and programming crystals and maybe doing it all again and want to know. I think I just want to know what timing, where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know your chart at all? I mean, or should
I do? Yeah. I do.
Maybe the best way I could relate to this would be, give me your day and year, and then I can quickly access what your cycles.
Okay, 12/31/58.
And what is your rising sign degree?
Let's see. 15 degrees, Virgo.
Okay, and what about the midheaven?
Now, I don't know about that. Where do I look?
MC.
Is 13 degrees Gemini.
Ah. Very interesting.
Yeah, so I love it. I can't wait to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, the midheaven is the primary personal symbol on the chart for right livelihood or your, you know, contribution in your life. And Virgo rising, obviously the number one question of your whole life is your sacred work. I mean,
not only Virgo rising, but Virgo moon.
Yeah.
And I'm a Capricorn, so.
Yeah, so what's happening currently is this: we're in the midst of a cycle of Jupiter moving through Gemini. And Jupiter symbolizes expansion. And
nice.
Often when Jupiter is moving across the midheaven, I mean, it's a time of kind of like a wave coming in, an activation of enthusiasm. I like to sometimes use a surfing analogy, you know. I mean, let's say the thing you do best and that you're most known for is surfing.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen when Jupiter hits the midheaven? Maybe you were a professional surfer, let's say, you see. And that would be the time period when you become aware of an island that you'd never heard of before, and it has bigger waves and longer rides, and it's surfing season.
Mm-hmm.
And the best timing on this, if you have, did you say 15 or 13 degrees?
13.
Yeah, so Jupiter goes direct in the latter part of January, January 30th or so, and then February, March, April, May is like the expansive wave of Jupiter.
Nice.
So my sense is, because there's really no timeline cycle that's
mm-hmm.
happening. This is a personal Jupiter cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And considering you had a major life-threatening situation,
mm-hmm.
and that you actually, I guess we could say quite clearly, that you are a wounded healer,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a very chironic type individual.
Very, very.
And you survived, I guess you could say, the junction point of the Chiron return. You know, so that you should have, at this point in your life, I would suspect, have distilled the elixir of your wound,
mm-hmm.
and you are ready to, you know, be your full speed ahead regarding your contribution at this stage of life. The only other thing I notice here is the fact that it's really very soon now that a long Pluto cycle to your sun in Capricorn is drawing to a close. You know, so I would suggest that that it's really a full speed ahead time for you.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
Are you looking at this too, Carolyn?
Yeah, I am looking at it, and I'm wondering, where does, because it looks like her sun's around 10 Capricorn, so where is Pluto coming back to in September?
Well, it's already got, no, I think it's probably more in the 9 here.
No, I'm I actually pulled it up on SolarFire, so.
It's 10 degrees. It's 10
degrees. Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, so basically it hits 10 in the spring.
What I'm looking at is that it looks like a long Pluto process. Just went from one thing to another to another to another to another, and you're kind of coming to the end of this really long, you know, just not much time between from one Pluto cycle to another. And so to me, what that says is that you're really ready to step out in a more empowered way than ever before.
Can you tell me when that started? What age that started?
I don't have an ephemeris in front of me.
But it seems to me you're at the phase of the Plutonian process and the underworld process. That's the empowerment that comes from it, you know, which is that insight that we would have here. And you have Jupiter and Scorpio anyway. You know, so it's the empowerment that comes from having been in the underworld. It kind of reminds me of this marvelous T-shirt that I've had friends wear, and this is really about the empowerment of the underworld. The T-shirt says, "Religion is for those who are afraid to go to hell. Spirituality is for those who've already been there."
That's awesome.
One thing I would say is that it looks like you probably went through Pluto square Pluto in the mid-90s. And that would have started one of the, you know, you would have also had some other things going on when Pluto was in Scorpio, which happened in the 80s. So it's, you know, you've been in a long process.
But
you passed the Chiron return. You decided to be here for this phase of life to make your contribution. So.
And when was that? Did you just say?
50 to 51 would have been the Chiron return.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this all makes sense. I was diagnosed in 92, but I almost died at the very end of 94 and beginning of 95. So, I've just continued to push through it. And just one thing I wanted to say is I do find it extremely easy to traverse the underworld,
Of course.
Lower world in the shamanic realms.
Yep.
And, I mean, it's just instantaneous. Mm. And, in fact, on 12-12-12, I had an incredible breakthrough of a veil being lifted. So lots of wonderful things.
Well, we're just giving you the second opinion on what you know. What you
well, thank know you. Thank your, you so
process.
Much.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's we should move on to someone else.
Well, yes, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, Daniel and Kaylin. This is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
And hi. I have, in the first house, I have Mars and Venus and my sun sign, which are all in Capricorn, and Pluto's coming up on those. And then in my second house, I have Saturn, Mercury, and Jupiter all conjunct as well. And then, so I'm wondering what to expect out of
it. Tell me your day and year, please.
Yes. 1/11/62.
So you just turned 50, so we know that you're probably in a Chiron return.
Let me check on that.
Chiron just passed Chiron.
So, and then you said that, are you Capricorn rising?
I am a Sag rising.
Okay, so then we would say all of those planets are in the second house because we use the whole sign.
Okay.
Okay, a first thing I need to share with you is that within the framework of the initiatory time frames we use,
yes,
you are not yet in Pluto cycle to Mars,
okay,
or Venus or the Sun.
Hmm.
The first of the ones that will go through a Pluto cycle is Mars at 13, but that isn't until 2014.
Okay.
In the particular way we look at initiatory cycles, the Pluto cycle is never more than a year and two-thirds. And
however, Daniel, it looks like her moon's around 12, almost 13 degrees, so she's going to have, she's in the crosshairs of the Uranus-Pluto square to her moon.
Yeah, but I'm addressing just her concern about.
I didn't know if you could tell what the degree of the moon was, so I just wanted.
No,
to
I can't. But I was accessing the Sun, Venus, Mars conjunction, all in Capricorn,
mm-hmm.
and that there could be some concern that Pluto is in Capricorn now, but it really isn't until 2014 that Pluto will be reaching Mars, then followed by Venus and the Sun later. So what did you get as her moon position, Kaylin?
It looks like it's around 12 or 13 Aries.
Well, that's still going to be 2014, sorry.
Are you talking about my natal moon, Kaylin?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
January 11th. I'm sorry. I got the wrong date. I was.
Okay, if I'm an Aries moon, wow. That would
no,
be
it's
to me.
It's a Pisces moon, it looks like.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh,
all right.
Well, good. Yes, because I didn't catch that at all. So I was.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was using the speed of the head thing on Solar Fire, and I didn't notice it. It shifted to the next day. So sorry about that.
Yeah, so I wouldn't. The Pluto thing to Venus, Mars, and the Sun is not until 2014. But a very intriguing factor, Mary, is that. Every 6.5 years, Venus, Mars, and the Sun are all joined together in the underworld.
Hmm.
And so, you see, in shamanic astrology, when Venus is this close to the Sun and when Mars is this close to the Sun, they both are invisible. They're on the other side of the Sun.
Ah.
And this, in shamanic astrology, is like an additional Plutonian element as far as the natal chart goes. I mean, you don't have a Pluto thing to Venus and the Sun and Mars natally, but you do have Venus and Mars in the underworld. Now, what is intriguing is that in April of next year is one of the times every 6.5 years where Venus, Mars, and the Sun are together in the underworld. It's not specifically your configuration,
yeah,
but it is a time period in order to get kind of like tune into the essence of what this configuration is.
Mm.
To me, when a person incarnates with Venus and Mars conjunct in the underworld, it's really kind of an articulate set of instructions for you to, on one hand, be compelled and be forced to do the sacred marriage work, but also to, as the Capricorn archetype, to include the underworld process as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge capacity there. Capricorn is, of course, about a matriarchal version of responsibility. It represents the Council of Elders, the Circle of Grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not some sort of detached patriarchal version of knowledge. I mean, this is so deeply connected to the mysteries of the sacred feminine.
Mm. That's
and I think
so
April will be a time period for you to get major clues about what your overall mission and purpose statement is. Did you say what your rising sign was?
I'm a Sag rising.
Mm-hmm.
And my north node's in Leo.
Okay.
Daniel, if it's Sag rising, it's in the Sag house. She also has Saturn in Aquarius around 1 degree, Mercury, Jupiter, 6 and 12, and and then the nodes.
Yeah, so she's in her Saturn square Saturn cycle.
Right, so generationally and personally, she's working with Saturn.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that if I was doing a longer session with you, I would be asking you to tune into what you were going through between age 21 and 22, because the time period you're in now would be the Saturn return to that point. It's
mm-hmm.
like the higher octave of that time period.
Okay.
And so it actually does represent the Saturn square Saturn cycle at age 51 is a full speed ahead time. I mean, it's like the Mayans would refer to this as the point of entering the Council of Elders on the basis of beginner's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like a completion of the digestion of everything your life has been up to this point, and then you're like ready for entrance into the circle of grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean grandmothers meaning hanging out with the grandchildren. I'm
talking about
in a position of where you're, you know, really have an opportunity to make a difference in the world and are respected for your capacities.
Mm. Thank you.
And then just one more thing too, to notice that she's got Jupiter going over her descendants because it's in Gemini.
Are you feeling strong?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, right now I feel a little wobbly, but I feel the Saturn square Saturn thing. I just changed my whole life in the last 2 years, and I'm full speed ahead in a new life.
Well, there's definitely not. When we were talking about earlier, you know, there's certain cycles that are about laying out or being on a sabbatical or, just healing. But this is definitely an action point, full speed ahead.
Mm, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mary.
We're going to
move along now here. I want to just address some of the questions that are coming in on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel, so somebody's asking about being in a Pluto cycle, and they'd love to hear your perspective. Also, somebody is saying that they have transiting Aries to their 8-degree transiting Uranus to their 8-degree Aries ascendant, and Pluto just passed for Capricorn, their midheaven in Capricorn, and then they have their north node at 6 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe Gemini. I can comment on. Let me comment on Uranus on an angle and Pluto on an angle.
Yeah.
So, and these are really good examples personally to this larger global aspect pattern. So they're very different. So if Uranus happens to be on the ascendant, the first thing to know about that is that it's a once-in-a-lifetime cycle. Uranus takes 84 years to go around the whole chart. And to have Uranus in about a year-long initiation window going over the eighth degree, back and forth over the eighth degree, this is about among the most remarkable, novel, wild, unexpected, unpredictable cycles a person could be in. In a situation like this, I kind of look at Uranus as a higher octave of Jupiter, and actually 7 Jupiter cycles precisely equal 1 Uranus cycle. So it's unexpected, unpredictable, unknowable events of extreme novelty, experiences of destiny and fate, activating the current life purpose storyline. Now, if it's Aries rising and Uranus on Aries rising, well, then what that is doing is it's like being hit by lightning, activating the desire, the need for an unbelievably remarkable and novel mission and purpose statement. The thing that Aries wants more than anything is an all-in black and white mission and purpose statement. Now, let's say there's an individual who felt they had what their mission and purpose statement was. When Uranus hits the ascendant, it could alter it quite majorly. You know, it's like everything you thought was true is no longer true as something new, remarkable thing comes in that changes the game entirely. For a person who doesn't have a mission and purpose statement, the purpose of Uranus hitting the ascendant is to to change the assemblage points so you get a direct transmission of that mission and purpose statement. Another factor would be, whilst you're in the Uranian cycle, it's very important to be flexible, to be open, to roll with the punches, because it's taking you in the direction your soul definitely wanted to go in, and to not be attached to what you believed your mission and purpose statement was before. So that's a take on Uranus. I mean, so the thing in general I'm sharing here is that when one of the outer planets hits the angle, it's using the initiatory intention of that planet to activate the most progressive parts of the chart. It's activating life purpose issues based on whatever that, what the strategy of that planet is. Uranus' strategy is totally different than Pluto. So if we look at Pluto on the midheaven, or we could also say Pluto on the rising sign, this is entirely different. It is an activation of current life purpose themes, but in an extremely, a more challenging way. I mean, usually when Pluto happens to be on an angle, and this is even more rare than Uranus on an angle, Pluto takes 248 years to go around the whole chart, so it's only going to be maybe at most twice on an angle during a lifetime. This is very different than Uranus, because what happens when Pluto is on an angle, it usually works getting our attention via the dark night of the soul relative to the intent. So we become aware of what's at stake through the powerlessness of being able to do anything about it. If it happened to be, Pluto is in Capricorn, if it's hitting a Capricorn rising or Capricorn midheaven, the desire of Capricorn on the midheaven is to make a difference in the world, to be an elder, to make decisions that are for the benefit of the seven generations to come, effective and useful and helpful. Custodian of the planet, in alignment with the planet Earth and her children, and the well-being of the planet for the seven generations and beyond. And sometimes when Pluto is on that point, it's like, God, I know what's at stake, but it seems to be utterly and completely and totally beyond my control. And that can produce a great deal of surrender and vulnerability to the process. Like we could say the dark night of the soul relative to the issue.
And then the other thing with this person who has the Uranus on her ascendant, she's also got Jupiter on her north node.
That's a double beauty.
Pluto just having completed the transit to the midheaven, so mm-hmm. It seems to me like she'd be in just an incredibly magical time.
Totally. I mean, when you put Jupiter on the north node and Uranus on the ascendant, that is the most exciting and powerful version of being on a progressive vision quest. You know, it's not like when you go on a vision quest and say that I know nothing and I'm, wasted, but rather when you send me my mission and purpose statement, I'm ready, and you can trust what comes through.
Right. So we ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay, next question.
Hi, my name's Lori, and I have had my Mars return as of December 5th this year, and Pluto is at 8
degrees.
Excuse
me, I missed that. Mars return at what age?
Sorry, right now, like I'm at 54, almost 55. My birthday's in February 23rd.
There's no Mars return then.
She's talking about a zodiacal return, not a synodic return.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're only addressing when Mars returns to its original degree, that happens really often.
Yes.
We're speaking of the synodic return, 15, 32, 47, 62, and 64, and 79.
Okay.
So I wouldn't look at Mars returning to its original degree as being at a very high octave, a very high tier of importance. But go ahead.
That's okay then. We won't talk about it then. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I don't want to take up anybody else's time then.
Well, what did you have some other cycle you wanted to get feedback on?
No, that's okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm. So just something for you to know is that if you're about to turn 55, you're actually, you know, as you approach age 56, during the time you're 55, you'll, mm-hmm. you'll go into your nodal return, which will last until you're age 57. And the Venus return can start as early as, you know, the late months of the age 54, depending on where Venus is in your cycle. And then near your birthday, age 56, will be when it's exact, but it is an 18-month cycle. So depending on where you are in that 18-month cycle, it's either starting as you're turning 56, you're somewhere in the middle of it, or something like that. So you could conceivably be in a Venus return now, and probably are now, because you will be turning, 56, and you'll probably be starting your Venus return in January of 2014.
Well, it does bring up an interesting issue, which is in general, I mean, there could be like some, you know, personal Pluto cycle that is an overlay, but in general, every decade has pockets of time where it like doors open as if, once again, all things are possible. I sometimes refer to these times every decade as youthening times, just like other time periods in every decade are dense and heavy and old and, you know, definitely the opposite of youthening. And in our 50s, that time is 55 and a half to 57, because it includes the nodal return and the Venus return together. In our 40s, it's generally between 46 and a half and 48. And in our 60s, it's the time from 62 to 64. This is just the information we have when we know what the timeline is. Those are the time frames usually where, like, oh yeah, once again, all things are possible, as opposed to other pockets of time where it can be, you know, more dense and more sober and more, in a sense, almost depressing and like, God, maybe it's over. So
that's exciting for you. You're coming into that. Yeah, you're coming into that time now.
Exactly.
Hey,
yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we'll take the next question.
Yeah, this is Emma Wehner, and I'm very interested in these synodic returns, if I'm saying it properly. I've just had my 79th birthday,
yes.
Which means I just heard you say I'm coming up to my Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I have Venus every 8 years, Mercury every 12. How often does Mars happen?
Well, the Mars synodic returns are at 15, at 32, at 47 is a pretty strong one, 62 and 64, and then there's a really, really exact one at 79.
Okay, that just blew my mind, because I'm at an in-between stage right now where I know I have a new cycle opening up in my life. And I know that sounds weird for somebody 79 saying that, but my life has always been one cycle. I've lived five lives already this lifetime, okay? And so I'm really interested in what I have opening up for me right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, the meaning for a woman of a Mars return?
Uh-huh.
Each time it happens, you know, 15, 32, 47, 62, 64, and then 79 being the most exact, it is actually the completion of the process,
really?
of the sacred marriage. Basically, it's the time period. If things go well, you've had the opportunity to form internal union with your masculine side, or with you know, all the various things that have happened in your life regarding external relationship projections. It's that whatever that archetype is of the masculine, for good or ill, is incorporated internally. And if things go well, the intent would be is that in the cycle wholeness, your internal union with your inner other will have been accomplished.
Do you know that that is what I've been aiming for in these in this last year or two? That is fantastic.
That is exactly the intent of the cycle, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Right on.
No.
Thank you, Emma. We're going to take the next question now.
Oh, hi. This is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
And my birthday is March 25th, 1949. A little bit's come out since I queued in, but you talked about when when a Uranus-Pluto square can affect your own natal chart. Uranus this week turned direct exactly on top of my natal sun, which is 4 degrees and 35 minutes of Aries.
Yes.
My understanding it went direct at 4 degrees, 36 minutes of Aries. And in this coming March, I'll be turning 64.
Oh, my gosh, I love that. I was born in 1948. And I'm also in the same window, which, I mean, age 64 is, I love age 64 because there's only one other time that what happens at 64 can happen, and that's age 32. Because in this awareness, this understanding of the synodic planetary returns, at 32 and at 64, Venus and Mars both are back to where they exactly were when you were born. So, for example, in the synodic cycle material, in February, Venus and Mars both enter into the underworld. And if you know your natal chart,
I do.
Both Venus and Mars and the Sun are all really close together. This happened at age 32 around your birthday, and it happened at age 64 around your birthday. So something that you might want to look at would be how age 32 was for you. And then this is a higher octave of that time. But if we go back to the Uranian transit for a moment, it's not going back to that degree. I mean, so this is the turning point in the Uranian transit to the Sun and also to Mars. You know, So the whole intent of the time period coming up while you're in a Mars return and a Venus return is not dissimilar from what I was sharing with the woman who was just before you at age 79.
Right.
It is one of the most powerful time periods that can possibly exist in a person's life for the sacred marriage. What I mean by the sacred marriage is when you basically have formed an internal union with your inner masculine and inner feminine, regardless of what is happening in your external life.
Right.
What is your moon?
20 Aquarius.
Oh, it's 20 Aquarius. Okay. All right. What was 32 like for you? That's the inquiry I would do if I was doing a longer session with you.
Just to say, too, that she's got that unique and special feature of having both Venus and Mars in the underworld with the Sun.
Yes, that's what I'm referring to, so that this is reoccurring again.
Right.
In March, in April.
Right.
I mean, this has been on my mind a lot because it's my own pattern. That when Venus and Mars go into the underworld in February, it's the only other time the very same thing happened in Aries was when we were soon after we were born. In your case, it was right at the time period you were born, and then also at age 32. There can be something quite almost spooky about it, actually. That the recurrence of these major Venus-Mars planetary cycles. I'm in the same part of the sky, in the same season, same stars, same constellations behind it, same number of degrees above the horizon. But in this case, they're not above the horizon. They're in the underworld. And that's similar to what the commentary I was making with a previous caller who also had the same situation. I find it interesting of the people who called in today There's another person who called in who had the very same Venus-Mars-Sun conjunction in the underworld. So does anything
really
come
powerful.
Up for you regarding that time?
Pardon?
No, 32.
That's 32. For me, motherhood was very, very important. I had lost the only child I carried and went 7 years of fertility work, 7 years straight every month of fertility work. And finally it was about that age that I was able to adopt a child. And it was age 32. We got the letter that we'd been accepted by an adoption agency, and the placement was made within a year. And it was a tremendous fulfillment of something that I had.
Wow, you really had a mission and purpose statement, didn't you?
And Venus and Pisces, too.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you, in my experience, very, very often, regardless of what your legitimate mission and purpose statement was, I mean, Venus and Aries, Jupiter and Capricorn, I mean, there's a lot of householder intent there, but often Aquarius moons.
Daniel, she's Venus and Pisces, Mars and Aries.
Oh, it's the very end degree of Venus?
Pisces, yeah.
29 yeah. something, huh?
Almost 28, 44, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at Jupiter and Capricorn also, and Aries Sun. But my point is that frequently Aquarius moon individuals, women, often do have a challenge in being fertile. But thank God you had so much intention that you actually accomplished it. I mean, even with an adoption.
Well, my son is conjunct Mars in Aries.
Yes.
So it's there for me to draw on when I need it.
Yes.
So that was, I'd say, was the focus at that age.
Mm-hmm.
But you could look upon it as just perseverance as being the focus.
True. Are you in a relationship at this point?
No, I'm very much looking forward to having one in my life, but I don't right now.
Mm-hmm. But that would be one of the things that I would talk about you with you at some depth, would be the particular challenges that happens for a woman who has Sun conjunct Mars in the underworld. It's practically the same as having a Pluto complex.
Oh, that sounds daunting.
But it doesn't have to be a bad thing, ultimately. It might be initially challenging, but ultimately it's meant to be empowering.
Well, it means that that you've had to go into the underworld in order to access your vulnerability.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I have prevailed.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that with
certainty. Of course you have.
Yes, I have.
Well, I think the larger view that I'm presenting here is that age 64 is one of the most remarkable time periods for being able to experience at a higher octave what the original intent of your whole horoscope is.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. I think
very
we need to move on.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
thank you.
I agree. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I just want to check on the Facebook page again real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked, if you have Pluto by transit at 5 degrees Capricorn on the descendant, does it mean you're in a Pluto cycle? Actually, that means it just completed.
It's completed, yes. It's passed.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that was a dark night of the soul regarding relational intent, but it's now passed. They've already finished the underworld transit.
Yep, exactly. So let's take the next question.
We'll take one more.
This is Frankie Lee, Kaylin. It's so great to be with you.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad you're here.
And to be calling in. How fun. So my birth date is May 10th, 1953. And I'm hugely interested to know about this moment, having made it through my second Saturn return. And also, I took off on my road trip, and it lined up exactly with Neptune entering Pisces on April 4th, 2011, and I've been in sync with these kind of things so much, so I thought it would be neat to hear your insights, the two of you. And hi, Daniel.
Hello.
Hello.
Do I know you?
Well, I'm not sure if we've actually spoken through the years. It seems like we have, and we've met in person. I'm mostly from Los Angeles.
What's your last name?
Slater.
Oh, yeah. I thought so. Yeah, I remember you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So here we are in perfect timing.
What is the degree of your moon?
I just wrote this down so I'd have it handy. The moon is 17 degrees, and it's conjunct Venus, which is 15.4 degrees in Aries.
Okay. All right, so that's a little bit later. All right. Well, and it was the 10th of May. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm most interested about this moment.
What's really interesting, and I think probably I'm going to turn it over to you, Kaylin, you may have some comments on this, but there's three different patterns to the second Saturn return process.
Yes.
And it is, in fact, true that you've completed your Saturn return. However, you are in the only 20% of the population. It's different than the 70% where Jupiter return and Saturn return happen at the same time.
Okay.
You're in the pattern of Jupiter return following the completion of the Saturn return. So Jupiter went into Gemini just at the point when you completed your Saturn return. So now this is a very intriguing pattern. And from the time that Jupiter went into Gemini until the time period where Jupiter is stationary direct, January 30th, I believe, you're in a really powerful portion of the Jupiter return following the Saturn return.
Uh-huh.
So when I have a client who's in this cycle, what I suggest for them to do is look back at what were you most enthusiastic about between age 11 to 12, 23 to 24, 35 to 36, and 47 to 48, because this is the fifth wave. And it's punctuated by also Jupiter going over Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this to me would be a youthening point. It would be a time period of high adventure, a time period of expansion and excitement about the possibilities for the next 12 years of your life.
Well, especially after, like, grudging through Saturn.
Right, it's kind of a reward. I mean, it's the 20% pattern that you are in, which is where Jupiter follows Saturn, if you've really successfully told the truth or gone through some, quote, hard things in the Saturn return, well, then this is like the thing that most feels like a reward for having gone through it.
Yeah, it feels like it's, you know, I went deep, I did the work, I kept going even when I would have liked to have it be completed sooner. Now I'm at the point where it's so integrous, like really mm-hmm. lusciously integrous, mm-hmm. and now it's all about taking it out there. And
yes, indeed.
And it feels to me, too, like there's something very much about, you know, these larger cycles we're all going through and my work and what it's been prepared for in terms of this time. So I don't know if there's anything indicated in there about partnership, about,
well,
you know,
actually, when Jupiter goes over a woman's Mars, which only happens every 12 years.
Yes.
Then it's a time period where you could be surrounded by positive images of the animus, of the Gemini expression. It's not the hard version of the sacred marriage process. It's the easier version of the sacred marriage process, you know, which is, I wouldn't call it a bonding time. I would call it an expansion and enjoyment and pleasure and play time.
Oh, gosh, that sounds great, Daniel. And the fact that my projects are all media projects,
yes,
with the Gemini, I imagine that's also part of it.
Very supportive, yes.
And thank you, Lee. Are you Leo rising or Virgo rising?
A Virgo 20 degrees, 21.
This is your time.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been, you know, what could be better than to have the fifth wave of Jupiter at a time period where you can enjoy it as an eternal youth?
And so then you also have, so Frankie Lee, then you also have a Gemini midheaven?
Yes, I do.
Yes, so there you go.
Even better.
Yep.
Yeah, 20 degrees.
You're in the circus and the carnival, Frankie Lee.
So then really, you have the Jupiter effect lasting until June for you as it goes across that midheaven and brings a renewal of vision into the work that you're putting into the world and your creative, you know, how you creatively do that. It's a fabulous expansion time for that as well.
Totally.
And then I turn 60 in May also, right with the eclipses.
Well, you've got so much to look forward to. Where do you see what it's like with 62 to 64? I mean, that'll be the most thrilling time.
Fabulous to hear, and so great to connect with you. Thank you so much for your contribution.
Thank you. Maybe we should just close now and make a couple of announcements.
Daniel, at 6:35, do we want to take another question, or do you want to wrap it up, or what should we do?
So.
Take one more?
Well, no, we probably should wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Okay. So I just want to thank everybody for having been on the call, and sorry for the people that were still in the queue that we didn't get to. If you want to find out more, you can always visit our website at shamanicastrology.com, and we will be sending out the email that gives you the information on how to download the call after, you know, it'll be probably going out sometime tomorrow is my guess. You'll also, that link will give you the access to the other calls in case you haven't downloaded them yet, so you'll be able to get them all. Mm-hmm. And we really thank you all for joining us, and we hope that what we've shared with you today has been helpful and supportive to you and your life journey.
There is the opportunity, if you want to learn more thoroughly what we've been talking about, we are doing that February event, 5-day, 4-night event, that's specifically about the timeline and the planetary cycles. And then
February 20th to the 24th, and it's going to be near Tucson, Arizona, and it really goes into depth about everything that we've talked about today. And you leave that course knowing how to look up your own cycles as well as the people that you love and care about, or if you want to incorporate this into whatever else other work you're doing, this can be really supportive to people who are in healing work, because if you see somebody who's in a Pluto cycle, then you may know that they may not respond in the way that you would expect. People would expect that would be in some other kind of cycle. That can be really helpful to know these kinds of things. So we would encourage you to come and join us for that class. And so again, just thank everybody for.
Let me just mention that. And then if any of the stuff we've talked about regarding the synodic cycles and the magic of the synodic cycles,
the March event
is about that.
Right, the one that I when I mentioned Faywood Hot Springs is going to be over the equinox at the March 16th to the 20th, and getting to learn a little bit about the night sky as well as about these synodic cycles. It's really fun place to go, and it's a sacred site with a standing stone circle as well as hot springs. So definitely check that out as well. So I think we're complete for tonight. Thank you again for joining us, and happy solstice, everybody.
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah.
What a powerful time to putting our attention on the transformation of the world and imagining a whole new epic on this planet and this solar system. Good riffing with you, Kaylin.
Yes, Daniel, thank you. And I think we're complete for tonight.
Okay. All right.